From A to Z by Susan Glaspell. Thus had another ideal tumbled to the rubbish heap. She seemed to be breathing the dust, which the newly fallen had stirred up among its longer dead fellows. Certainly, she was breathing the dust from somewhere. During her senior year at the university, when people would ask, "And what are you going to do when you leave school, Miss Willard?" she would respond with anything that came to hand, secretly hugging to her mind that idea of getting a position in a publishing house. Her conception of her publishing house was finished about the same time as her class day gown. She was to have a roll-top desk, probably of mahogany, and a big chair which whirled round like that in the office of the undergraduate dean. She was to have a little office all by herself, opening on a bigger office, the little one marked private. There were to be beautiful rugs. The general effect, not unlike the library at the university club, books and pictures and cultivated gentlemen who spoke often of Greek tragedies and the Renaissance. She was a little uncertain as to her duties, but had a general idea about getting down between 9 and 10, reading the morning paper, cutting the latest magazine, and then writing something. Commencement was now 4 months past, and one of her professors had indeed secured for her a position in a Chicago publishing house. This was her first morning, and she was standing at the window looking down into Dearborn Street while the man who was to have her in charge was fixing a place for her to sit. That the publishing house should be on Dearborn Street had been her first blow, for she had long located her publishing house on that beautiful stretch of Michigan Avenue which overlooked the lake. But the real insult was that this publishing house, instead of having a building, or at least a floor, all to itself, simply had a place penned off in a bleak, dirty building, such as one who had done work in sociological research instinctively associated with a box factory. And the thing which fairly trailed her visions in the dust was that the partition penning them off did not extend to the ceiling, and the adjoining room, being occupied by a patent medicine company, she was face to face with glaring endorsements of Dr. Bunting's famous kidney and bladder cure. Taken all in all, there seemed little chance for Greek tragedies or the Renaissance. The man who was running things, she buried her phraseology with her dreams, wore a skullcap, and his mustache dragged down below his chin. Just at present, he was engaged in noisily pulling a most unliterary pine table from a dark corner to a place near the window. That accomplished, an ostentatious hunt ensued, resulting in the triumphant flourish of a feather duster. Several knocks at the table and the dust of many months, perhaps likewise of many dreams, ascended to a resting place on the endorsement of Dr. Bunting's kidney and bladder cure. He next produced a short, straight-backed chair, which she recognized as brother to the one which used to stand behind their kitchen stove. He gave it a shake, thus delicately indicating that she was receiving special favors in this matter of an able-bodied chair, and then announced with brisk satisfaction, "So, now we are ready to begin." She murmured a thank you, seated herself and her buried hopes in this chair which did not whirl round, and leaned her arms upon a table which did not even dream in mahogany. In the other publishing house, one pushed buttons and uniformed menials appeared, noiselessly, quickly, and deferentially. At this moment a boy with sandy hair brushed straight back in a manner either statesmanlike or clown-like, things were too involved to know which, shuffled in with an armful of yellow paper which he flopped down on the pine table. After a minute he returned with a warbled, "Take me back to New York town," and a paste pot. And upon his third appearance he was practicing gymnastics with a huge pair of shears, which he finally presented, grinningly. There was a long pause, broken only by the sonorous voice of Dr. Bunting, upbraiding someone for not having billed out that stuff to Apple Grove. And then the sandy-haired boy appeared.